Mr. Sampson, thank you for joining us on a Friday. I promise you we won't keep you an hour and 41 minutes. It's like Ariel Helwani. He got, I mean, that was every Montreal Expos fan's dream. Let's be honest, to have you in the ring for basically 2 hours. And I thought you did okay, for what it's worth.
Well, it's worth a lot to me. I think that I have always been sorry about what happened in Montreal, and I've always acknowledged the role I played. What I've always tried to say is that I'm not sure there was anything more I could have done. There were so many circumstances that existed that I probably made worse. But had I been a magician, I'm just not sure it would have stopped MLB from taking the Expos out of Montreal. I think that could someone have come in and done a better job of getting public financing in Montreal? Could someone have come in and done a better job of getting a TV deal in Montreal? Could someone have come in and done a better job of getting people to come to Olympic Stadium? Of course, I'm not the best team president in the history of sports, but I thought that what Ariel got wrong during this hour and 40-minute barrage is I think that he really let his emotions get in the way too much, and I think that's reflected in a lot of the comments I'm seeing or that people are sending to me and I'm seeing on Twitter and social media, and I understand the emotion, and that's why I'm sad and sorry about what happened, but I don't know that pinning everything on my failings does anything other than maybe make people feel better. So if I did that for anybody in Montreal, then that was a day well spent.
David was on with Ariel Helwani on the Dan Lebatard Show's Local Hour, which was hosted by Mike Ryan. Well, you can check it out on podcast. All right. Let's move on to the Major League Baseball Players Association expressing no interest in the offer from the owners. Meanwhile, David, players are working out, socially distancing, mind you, but they're working out at their facilities. So it seems as if now we're talking about the owners imposing this protocol on the players. Is there any way we don't have baseball? You know, I mean, we've been saying, oh, my God, they need an agreement. They need an agreement. Well, do they really need an agreement?
Well, there is a collective bargaining agreement right now that they're operating under. And the agreement that was signed in March 26th does give the commissioner the right, in theory, to impose a schedule. And that schedule could have 20 games, 40 games, 80 games, one game, 100 games. And that is the schedule. Now, there is a grievance procedure during the existence of a collective bargaining agreement where MLB files grievances against the union files grievances against MLB. That's a Tuesday in those types of relationships. But if there's a grievance filed in this case, that would really put the entire season in jeopardy. And the owners know that. So while the commissioner does have the power to implement a schedule, and I think that's pretty clear, and then would have to pay the players their pro rata salaries depending on the number of games. So the players would accomplish their goal of saying we're not taking a second pay cut, and the owners would accomplish their goal of saying, well, we're not losing more money, we're just going to play fewer games. That sort of one-way implementation, which can be effective in other circumstances, I don't think is effective here in this environment, so I don't think the commissioner will do it.
So to get that straight, David, so you think that based on the March agreement, the owners, like if they said, look, okay, we're going to play a 48-game season, that's what we have decided, and that based on the March agreement, they could compel the players to play that 48-game season, what would the basis of the grievance be then?
That there was not sufficient bargaining in good faith, because part of the agreement states that you have to have a good faith conversation, and that's where obviously all grievances and all lawsuits happen. When you try to define what bargaining in good faith is, what are reasonable best efforts, what are best efforts, all the stuff when you sign an agreement that you don't pay attention to, lawyers put words in that have great meaning when you get inside a courtroom or an arbitration room. And what is the threshold required to convince an arbitrator that, hey, we did negotiate in good faith. We weren't going to counter what the players offered. And the players say, we negotiated in good faith. We're not going to counter what the owners offered. It was completely unreasonable. Then you've got arbitrators who get to decide that. But again, This is not the environment for an arbitrator to get involved.
You know, David, one of the things we were sort of talking about at the top here is prior to introducing you was, you know, the appetite of the public. And, you know, my thought was that you're going to be too reactionary to say that if baseball doesn't play this year, nobody's coming back to baseball or there'll be no more baseball fans. You know, that's just factually never going to be true. But I do believe that there's the more other sports that sports fans can sample over these next couple of months, if baseball is not around, I do think there's a legitimate threat for it to move down the pecking order of the American sports fans' interest. How do you see that statement that I just made, and how do you view that?
I view everything as a math equation. So let's put numbers on what you're saying. So if there's no baseball for the year, and you say that that will have a deleterious impact on fans, affinity toward baseball. Okay, how does that happen? That means they don't go to games. All right, what does that mean? So if a team is averaging 40,000 people a game, and now 50% of your audience disappears, so that's 20,000 people a game, what does that equal in millions of dollars? And every team can do that, and the league can do that, and we do those exercises. The TV deals don't go away because the networks need the programming. The national TV deals don't go away because those are deals that make money for the broadcasters as well as for the league. From a licensing standpoint, are you saying that I'm no longer going to buy Dante Bichette, can you imagine? That's just because I'm old. Am I not going to buy a Bo Bichette jersey because they didn't play this year, but he's still my favorite player? Well, when Christmas comes along next December, and my child or significant other wants a Bichette jersey or a jersey, we're going to do it. But let's say that those fall by 50 or 70%. Again, it's just all math. The problem here, guys, is if the players get paid what they want to get paid, all that money, it equals more than the amount of revenue that will be lost by people actually following through with what they're threatening to follow through with.
So is there any, I'm going to use the phrase accountant's trick here, but is there any way that ownership, as some people have suggested, can somehow push the burden off for another year through taxes I don't know, I'm not an accountant, but are there any tricks out there, I guess, David, that owners could use to mitigate the damage immediately? And maybe try to make it up next year or address it next year or the year after that.
Well, that's what players have been trying, Jeff. They've been saying, just we'll take the money deferred, no problem. Just like the people who are getting drafted next Wednesday, the kids getting drafted, normally they would get their full bonus paid within the first, let's say, 6 months. Now it's going to be 2 years plus before they get their full bonus paid with no interest. That sort of deferral can work. That's what the Mets did with Bobby Bonilla, what we did with so many players where we would defer money because we thought that we could have current day cash flow relief and that the days of deferral are so far down the road that it'll all work out in the end. But those days come quickly. So deferring for a year or two when you don't know how quickly your revenue is going to rebound, it doesn't work. Plus, don't forget what the Wilpons were doing with that money that they were not paying to players. They were investing it with Bernie Madoff and getting, and I'm making this up, say 15%, but only paying Bobby Bonilla 5%. So they were actually making money by deferring money, which makes it acceptable and a good business deal. But in this interest rate environment, with the investment environment and the economic potential recession, you can't guarantee that deferring money will do anything but cost you actual more money versus saving you money.
What about what's the in terms of kicking the can down the road in various ways, David? With the end of the collective agreement looming in 2021, how does that focus the mind?
Well, that's something that I've been wrestling with actually, because I still view that what's going on now is not relevant to the 2021 negotiation that has to take place. What's happened, though, is that they're beginning to bleed into one another because both sides have such distrust toward each other, and both sides think that they're positioning for the next agreement. And if I had an opportunity to speak to the commissioner and explain to him, I would say one thing. Don't confuse trying to gain leverage for next agreement right now, because this is an unprecedented situation where the appetite for that sort of leverage creation does not exist the way it does in normal situations.
Mm-hmm.
David, from your perspective, and someone obviously who was sort of in the middle of this kind of business, how will the contraction of the draft, you think, ultimately impact the sport?
I'm a bit in the minority here, because it's something that I wanted for every one of my 18 years. Too many players drafted. Yeah, there's some great late round picks. There's no question about it. There's some players who surprise, who become better than you thought they would be, who develop differently. But it's a lot of money you're investing for a lot of players who don't have one chance to even get a cup of coffee. I don't think five rounds is the right number. I personally think 10 rounds is the right number for a draft. I don't think you need more. For affiliates, you don't need more than three, while teams will say they'll take four, but certainly not seven or eight or nine. And so I don't think there'll be a long-term impact. What people are saying, if you could give me a minute to explain this, if you don't mind, I'm sorry to talk so much, but they're saying that kids will not play baseball now because they will choose other sports because they will not see a path to being drafted. That's not really how it goes. The reason why kids choose baseball is it's their path to guaranteed money, or it's the skill they have greater than the skill they have in another sport. And when we negotiate with athletes like Giancarlo Stanton, who's a two-sport athlete, and we convince them to skip college and come be a minor league player, we do that by saying it's safer. You have a path to the big leagues and to accruing service time and getting to free agency in a much faster way than you do in any other sport. So I don't believe that it will have that impact on kids that people are saying. But by the way, it's a great way to see.
Mr. Sampson, it's always good to hear from you. Great insight as always. As I said, I'm glad you emerged unscathed from the octagon.
I always emerge unscathed, Jeff. You know that.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Take care.
Doesn't mean I'm always right, but it means I duck and cover. Have a safe weekend, guys. Mm-hmm.